You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment.
Folks, it is Thursday night. My name is Troy LaValle, and it's time for chaos. This is episode 2 of our Masks of Nyarlathotep show, which is going to last for the next 8 years. And calling this episode 2 is an insult to episode 2's everywhere, because this is really where the story begins. Last week was character creation. It was fantastic. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it, but tonight is where we jump into this epic tale. This is just, here it is. I still have the one that we're, look at the size of this. We're playing all of this, whether you like it or not. It's huge. But we're going to get through half of it tonight. I'm going to move at lightning speed just because I don't want this to take as long as I think it's going to take. However, before we get into that, before we get into the nitty gritty, it's very important for me that this is a new cast, new group, that we get to know each other. We want to really feel like friends at the table. And so I think a good way of doing that is a little icebreaker so we get to know each other a little bit better, get to really know the people behind the characters. So I'll just throw out two questions, and you could pick one of the two, softball question to get things started, so that the millions of people watching and listening can get to know you and me. What is your favorite ice cream, or what is your most haunting sexual encounter? I'll start. Pistachio.
Which question is that an answer to? Yeah.
That was the name of the Chicago stripper that gave me the ride of my life. No, I, Ross.
Nailed it.
Yes. As I try to come back from my haunted reverie, Troy, pistachio almond, bud.
We don't have to answer these questions.
Bluebell, Texas Company, great stuff.
We did ask, we've asked this on all the shows, what favorite ice cream flavor is, and it usually just starts fights once somebody says mint chip.
That was mine!
I knew you were a mint chip!
Had mint chip written all over your face!
No, but I do want to get to know you guys, so what do you want to talk about yourself? What is the most important thing that we don't know about you? We'll start with Kate.
I don't know.
Are we doing two truths and a lie?
Two truths and a lie. Or you could choose most haunting sexual encounter. We're going to leave that one out there. You can always come back to that. You're a gamer, but you're a computer geek. What do you call it? What do you do? Programmer?
I'm
hacker?
Are you an illegal
FBI hacker?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. Oh, I'm a software engineer for money. For a job. So
what is that all about? Do you just wake up and start coding?
On the computer and I'm like, please do this thing, and it's like, maybe not, maybe I'll do something else, and you're like, but I need you to do this thing because that's what the shareholders want, and they wanted it yesterday. And yeah,
I just have no idea what you do for 8 hours a day. Like, that just sounds fun. It sounds
fun. Computer, and then I also refine requirements a lot.
See, don't know what that means either. But it sounds really cool, and I wish I knew how to do that. Are you working in, like, DOS with, like, lots of code? Like, remember when you used to have to use MS-DOS? You have to know all of the little handles to try and get things to work?
I guess so. I mean, like, with engineering, like, you're working in a terminal, which I guess looks like that. Yeah, but I mean, I work in mainly JavaScript and Ruby, so it's a more friendlier, English reading friendly language than maybe something like Java, which is like, you can read it, but it's pretty verbose. And it's like, what's all going on? Like Ruby is just kind of like English. You can read the instructions. And you're like, oh, I know what this program's kind of doing.
Seven or eight.
My mind is blown. I feel like there's so many jobs that somebody says that they do them, and I'm just like, okay.
There's seven coder, or eight people in the chat that are fired up about what you do.
Stock trading, scientist, teacher. It's a lot. Confuses me.
Yeah, like a day trader. What do they do all day?
Yeah, what are you doing?
What are you? You're just losing stealing, money all day?
Just loosening your tie stressfully.
Yeah.
Rob, what's something we don't know about you that we should know? Or you don't want us to know? Or most haunting sexual
thing? So the haunting sexual thing. It's not that haunting, but it just is like, this is kind of combines everything. I got started a little late, guys. I'm not going to lie. Troy knew me in high school. He knows things were not great for me in the lady department. They continued that way for a while. Well, I'm not going to say how long. But let's just say past that. Past high school. So I wasn't the most experienced gentleman. And I definitely have a vivid memory. This is not too graphic, so don't worry. But early on in my escapades... I went to grab a condom. That's a prophylactic. It's a safe sex situation. And I have the ability to cut myself on almost everything. I've cut myself on a shrimp tail once.
Is that a sexual thing, too? A zipper
got me once. And a condom wrapper got me. Just full on, just paper cut level, like, ah! Like, I scream, like there was some sort of... screaming happened. Didn't do wonders for the mood at the time. I think we ended up, you know, figuring it out. But it was not.
Just looked like a crime scene.
And it was early on, right? It was early on into the what is now a storied career. But it was definitely like, is this going to happen every time? So then, you know, then in the follow up. Sessions, there'd be a very tense, like, I'd be very careful, just very slowly.
Just minutes ticking by.
Get a pair of scissors.
Gingerly.
Yeah.
Peel.
So there you go.
That's a good one. That wins so far.
God, I'm just imagining like a universe where Marvin Gaye includes this in like Let's Get It On. It's like,
oh, you got yourself on a con, baby.
And I cut myself on the
bleeding
river.
Out, and everybody's concerned.
Yeah,
the fingers. A little cut will bleed for a long time on the finger too.
Everything's going dark.
Your vision's getting blurry, baby.
Nora, how would you like to continue this horrible conversation?
You know, let's just shift gears a little bit and talk about. I'll do something that somebody doesn't, that most people don't know about me.
Okay, that's a good one.
And that was prior to being a full time professional nerd in the gaming niche. This thing that we do. I had a job at a time. I got paid for doing this. I was a cadaver dissector for a few years.
Like a real, like real cadavers or the operation?
Yeah. No, it was real. It was for the part of the university. And I was first was like apprenticed to do it and then was like, oh, we're going to hire you to do this for us.
Wow. Did you have to wear those the little smelling things under your nose so you didn't smell it?
No, although that would have been so helpful. But we did. There was one time during the winter break where it was just two of us with the cadavers and we were like hacking away, doing our thing because it has to be like ready for the spring semester.
Sure.
To show classes. So we're working while everybody's away. But we have got the music blasting. And so we had, apparently there was a noise complaint. And so all of a sudden a cop busts in the door and I have like a scalpel in my hand and I was like, and then like I do this and I drop it. And like, he's like, oh, yeah, there was just, the guy comes in, he's like, yeah, there was just a noise that we were seeing about the noise.
First day on the force.
Really, like almost fainted. Yeah, so that's something that a lot of people don't know about me.
What music were you blasting?
That was my question.
It was like an 80s playlist. At the time,
Thriller.
I don't remember what specific song.
Thriller, maybe some Hall and Oates.
Psycho Killer. It's just music that doesn't. I don't know.
Like music that doesn't suggest you're maybe dissecting a body.
It was Susu Studio from
Huey Lewis. Insert any Patrick Bateman
approved. We had the clear raincoats on, and
oh my god! Wow, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. I was not expecting that. You learn something new every day. Russ, what the hell do we need to know about you?
Holy moly! How do I Trump's condom mishap and the time spent, quote, hacking up cadavers.
I mean, there's a theme here. It's mutilation.
Yeah. So, whether it be code, fingers, or bodies.
Yes, yes. Red in tooth and claw. What the hell? I had some good, like, mayhem tales. Yeah, no, I don't. I will say I may have mentioned this before, but maybe not. On the subject of weird jobs, I worked on a cruise ship for a little while.
Oh,
I was for about 4 months. I worked on a cruise ship as an entertainer, and in a ship that went around the Mediterranean. But what you learn about the ships is that it's a floating city. So there are morgues on every cruise ship. There are aged people that take cruises, and sometimes things happen. So on any given Carnival cruise, is like someone is like acoustic guitaring a Jimmy Buffett song next to a tubular water slide several decks down. Someone may be having an experience not unlike Nora's.
embalming
a body fresh from the chocolate buffet.
Shit.
Another one drowned in the chocolate fountain.
We got another one.
Code Alpha.
I fell into an internet hole once reading about just the whole bureaucracy and everything behind working on a cruise ship, and it was the most depressing thing I've ever, like, in terms of the...
It's a bizarre place.
If you want to break your contract before you're back at your home port or whatever, you just have to get off, and it's up to you to find your way back.
It's gnarly. If you have shore leave, so to speak, and you miss the window when the ship leaves, they have your passport. So you got to cross multiple governmental multiple borders sans passport. It's rough.
And they purposely fly the flags for different countries so they don't have to follow the rules of the country they left from or that they're technically owned by.
It's its own law.
Hold on to your passport. Isn't that like trafficking? If you're being transported from place and you don't want to go, but they're not giving you your passport.
Take it up with Norwegian Cruise Lines. I think it's technically for your safety. Certain ports, they give it back to you because certain ports of call and customs require that you have it on you. Others, you just roll on and off.
That's so
sketchy. A very eventful several months.
Wow.
We should just play this adventure because I'm seeing all five of our stories linking up while Rob is entering an amorous situation. There's blood
on the cruise
everywhere.
Ship where they always happen.
Right. And they have to take him to the morgue. And it's Ross stumbling.
Oingo is blasting.
Right.
Yeah.
While Nora's working on it.
I am the Krieger in this Archer situation.
Yeah. Kate's hacking away to try and move passports around so no one knows about the victim, and Pistachio and I are having a hell of a time on the fourth floor. Well, we'll tell that story another time. Instead, we're going to segue from that into our adventure. That actually does have ships. That's the only way you can get around. There's no intercontinental flights here, so it's going to be a lot of role-playing 20 days at sea to get from country to country, and we're going to role-play every second of it, so I don't have to prepare episodes when I don't want to. But I did prepare tonight's, just because I can't help but give, and I think we're just going to jump right in. I'm going to set the scene with a little scene, actually. Can I get the DJ to play some hot beats behind me? Maybe something that's got like a heartbeat. It's a very short scene. Ooh, there it is. That's DJ Khaled we had working the ones and twos for this episode tonight. Thank you.
It is not. He would be screaming his name right now. Yes.
We would have heard We the Best by now.
DJ Khaled. That really ruins the immersion, DJ Khaled. But I want you all to kind of jump into your imagination if you have one. Some people are born without imaginations, and they live a very sad life. But assuming the four of you have imaginations, I want you to picture a dimly lit corridor of what looks like a hotel. Might be an apartment building, but it has an hotel feel. These old apartment buildings now, a lot of them were old hotels. So that's what we see. Lights come up on this, and the corridor just stretches all the way down. The lights come up, and we see at the end of the hallway is a single door. And we hear the footfalls of several people walking slowly down the hallway toward this door. As the door starts to come into focus, you see the numbers 410. Someone, perhaps one of these people walking towards the door, knocks. And you hear that like goo, goo, goo of the knock. And after the knock, there's this sound, this muffled sound of maybe a cry and quick movement from within the room. There's an intense sense of foreboding that lingers in the air, for you are certain on the other side of that door, something terrible lies within. After the briefest moment of hesitation, the door to room 410 is thrown open, and we rush in as the scene fades to black. From there, lights come up on a rather bustling market district somewhere. And then like a lower third in a James Bond movie or one of the Marvel movies, a little title comes up on screen that says, Lima, Peru, March 18th, 1921. Over the past month or so, maybe a little bit more, each of you, in whatever places you are in, has heard about an upcoming expedition, either in the international press or through academic associations or any association that you may be involved with. Let me direct you to Roll 20 for one such article you may have seen. Let's see here, documents there. Okay. If you refer to your little sidebar here, you'll see an article that's titled Search for Ancient Pyramid in Peru. Do you see that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Explorer plans expedition to discover site of lost civilization, Lima, January 12th. Explorer Augustus Larkin is planning an expedition to the southern highlands of Peru, where he hopes to identify the site of a pyramid long forgotten by history. Following the discovery of a number of gold artifacts in the region, Larkin believes that he has found evidence that will lead him to their source. He is currently in Lima, planning the expedition, and is recruiting companions and possible backers. So whenever the four of you have come across this news, whether it be in the paper or through some of your contacts, there's something in this that has intrigued you. Now, for Nora's character, the intrigue is a lot more obvious. You study cryptology. Of course, you'd be interested in something like this. But for others, that intrigue may be more veiled. Whatever the case, over the past few weeks, each of you has reached out to this Augustus Larkin and secured your place on this expedition. In the past week or so, maybe in the past couple weeks, you received a telegram from him. Who would like to read that telegram that is also now visible on your sidebar? From the Trans-Pacific Telegraphy.
I'll do it.
Do it.
I shall do it. Thank you for joining the expedition. Stop. Please join me in Lima. Stop. Have booked you a room at Hotel Maori. Stop. Meet 18th. Oh, no. There's a big magnifying glass over this word.
Click the magnifying glass. It'll blow up.
Ah, science. meet 18th March at 7 p.m. at Bar Cordano. Hiron?
I think so.
Ancash 202. Distrito de Lima. Stop. I took French, by the way. So I apologize for butchering that last name. Augustus Larkin.
I'm going to do the same thing. So you get this telegram from Augustus Larkin. You've joined the expedition, and he's telling you where to meet. So now we come back to that bustling market, and we see a sign for Bar Cordano. Let's say Ross's character arrives. Ross Vaughn appears in the front door of Bar Cordano. And you see inside, it's a restaurant that's pretty tastefully furnished. You see wood paneling and fixtures and a tiled floor. What does Vaughn look like?
As Vaughn walks in, you're seeing a sort of roughed up, genteel visage, a sort of like boyish face. It looks like an overgrown schoolboy. A shock of kind of strawberry blonde hair and mustache with a couple days growth of beard in several layers of jackets and tweed, sweat slicked face, and like a little cigarette dangling from his lips, and it's like, so he just like strides in, makes straight for the bar. It's like, perhaps someone can get a gin around here. It'd be only too shame-making if one couldn't in a place like this. Been in Belize for too bloody long. Anybody around here speak the Queen's? And so he walks up to the bar and plants himself down.
Let's say, Nora, your character is sitting there at the bar, and you hear this British gentleman speaking English in a primarily Spanish-speaking town. What does Fairuz? Is it Fairuz or Fairuz?
Fairuz.
Fairuz. What does Fairuz look like?
Fairuz is a tall, slender Arab woman. She has light olive skin, dark hair, dark eyes. She's wearing a simple black dress and like a sun hat. You can tell by her appearance that she's very smartly dressed but doesn't have a lot of money. But keeps herself put together. She's carrying with her a messenger bag, and she's got like stacks of notebooks and different journals and textbooks with her.
And so you hear this guy, does anyone speak the Queen's English? Do you respond? Do you make a...
Yeah, I speak sort of the Queen's English. I'm not super regal.
So, yeah, and if that's within his earshot, like, immediate, like, swivel over to you. It's like, and I suppose we'll make it two. It's, not quite sunset. Not nearly tight enough for my liking. Make it two, barkeep. Dose gin, por favor. He's trying make himself understood. He's like, the name's Villiers. Pleasure.
I'm Fairuz. You really don't know how to blend in, do you? That's okay. Neither do I.
Fraid, yes, Fraid never really been my forte. Once I've been wound up, then I'm afraid it just keeps coming. Rather, He's like sucking one cigarette down. He's like lighting the next one.
Do you want to make his drink doubles? As I over to the bartender.
Oh yeah, just like capital idea. Yeah, I can tell you and I are going to get along just fine. He's like,
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to tell me what you're doing here?
Expedition into the mountains.
Oh. You're here for the pyramids. Is that right?
I suppose when you read it over the wire, then it shouldn't be that big of a secret. Yes. I've seen the pyramids of Giza and a few of the step pyramids around Memphis way as I made my way across Tunis and on through Cairo on way to Tehran. But I thought I'd take a gander at what's around here. Some friends might have the bloody idea that they're all connected somehow. Lot of rubbish. But I suppose I'll see it with my own eyes.
Impressive.
Anything to keep the dogs from my back? What?
Your travels are impressive. I can't say the same, but I've studied a lot. I, too, wish to see or go back to Cairo one day. I was only a little girl the last time I was there.
But I rode a camel around the thing. It's got a devil of a bite.
I thought camels spit. I didn't know they bite.
No, there's very little they don't do. Besides,
you know,
keep me on their bloody humps. I feel.
You know, after a few drinks, I might ask you more about that.
Bartender comes over with three bottles of gin. Places one in front of Nora, two in front of Ross's character.
Now that's service. Look at you. And I just maybe look over. Must confess, in this for the adventure. But are you really on the expedition with this Larkin chap?
I too got that wire. But it's in my field of study, you see. I study cryptography.
Well, I study propulsion. Wherever I'm inspired to go, that's where I'm headed to.
I see. So what is it that interests you in this, in particular?
There's only so many things that one can see before they shuffle off this mortal coil. I just want to pack as much as I can in the old bean before it goes. Living on borrowed time as it is.
All right, if you don't want to tell me exactly why you're here, maybe you'll tell me after a few.
Well, very well. Just say futures and loosen tongues. He's like...
And as you toast, maybe... Kate's character, Margot, saunters up to the entrance. Kate, you take this whole thing in. What does Margot look like?
So Margot has dark hair. It's short. I mean, it probably looks similar to mine currently, where it's really, really short on the sides and maybe longer on top. She has bangs. She's got a button-up shirt on and trousers. She has her bags and a sketchbook and a camera around her neck. Maybe looks a little disheveled, just traveling here, and probably overhears people speaking American English, and is just looking for someone to help her out here. So I bet she saunters over and is like, "Oh, excuse me. Oh, are you American? Can you help me? I'm looking for Augustus Larkin."
Funny you should say that. I'm looking for him too.
Oh, so funny.
Yeah, there's a bit of that going around.
Okay, well, I'm gonna stay with you. And she like starts putting all her shit down.
But you won't find any Americans here, darling. I'm sure you can tell by the effervescent and blinding amount of class radiating at you at this very moment.
Oh yes, so, your class just screams across the room. And yeah,
what's your name, sweetheart?
Margot. How about you all?
I'm Feyruz.
He's like not even removing the cigarette. He's just Villiers, as he's like calling for a third glass and sliding it over to you and pouring you four fingers of gin.
Oh, thank you. What is this? It's clear. Oh. The bartender takes it, makes a face.
Hands you a bottle of gin as well. So you guys are getting pretty lit up on gin. As Rob's character, Carter, arrives, and you see immediately these three people that look completely out of place in the bar amongst the locals. There are obviously tables in the back, and there's a lot going on, but you're drawn to this. What does Carter look like? Is Carter's got a very unique look.
Yeah, well, I guess as we see Carter sort of enter, we see him in profile, and he's very, like, kind of chiseled jaw, kind of classically handsome man. And then he turns and we see that the other half of his face is covered in this very, like, thin copper prosthetic facial mask that's painted to kind of match his skin tone. So obviously it's covering up some sort of a wound that he doesn't necessarily want to show off. And as he turns, he's just like, I need a fan. I need either a ceiling fan or just, it's so, guys, it's so hot. Does anyone speak English? Fan-o. And he starts, like, gesticulating, like, you know, really obnoxious American, assuming that people should just understand his language.
You see Feyruz rips open a page from a journal, folds it up into a fan, throws it over at him. He's like, that's the best you're going to get here.
Well, it's gonna do. And he picks it up and is just like, oh, you guys here for the old temple shenanigans?
Oh, yes.
Cool, me too.
Wow.
I speak in a way that might sound more future-y to some people. There might be times where I drop words that sound a little anachronistic.
Well, you look future-y. That plate. It's the cat's pajamas.
Oh,
truly.
You flatter me,
my
lady.
She looks at all of you Americans, like, approvingly of the slang she just used, like,
as well.
Says you. Looks like he upset the wrong fella.
And Vaughn maybe extends his hand, and looking way more serious than he has up until any point. You know, it's like, yes. Well, to speak out of turn, old boy.
Great to meet you guys. Looks like we got a little party tomorrow. Going on before the party, huh?
Hmm?
And he's just pointing at all the various glasses and bottles that are now covering the bar.
Three Bombay Sapphires. You know, even
well,
though
whatever it was, I'm sure you gave as good as you got. And I'll slide over another glass for you.
Oh, yeah, that I shot that horse. Huh? Oh, you think... Oh, no, no, no. No, I'm not stupid enough to fight in a war.
Just staring ash falling. Like, kind of...
Is that one of your slang terms that I'm not familiar with? The shot as a horse?
No, I literally killed a horse that kicked me in the face. While I was giving my wonderful wife assistance... the horse, the mare she was on, oh, she kicked me. And that has given me cause to put a tin prosthesis on my face.
Huh.
But thanks for calling it out. I really appreciate that.
Well, you're not really trying to be very inconspicuous about it.
I mean, it's this or just, you know, a big gaping maw in my face. I figured one, you know, kind of better than the other.
The maitre d' comes over and did any of you speak Spanish? Or any of you have the Spanish language skill?
Well, so nope. I read that if you know, English or German, you like by default know a little bit of Spanish, like type of, or like there's groups of languages that you can know. Maybe Spanish isn't one of them.
Okay. Well, I would say you probably, if you knew you were coming here, you had a long boat ride over, maybe you had a little book of Spanish phrases you were at least looking. And so you get the sense that he's asking you, do you have a reservation? Are you meeting someone?
Oh, yes. Augustus Larkin?
Yes, of course. Looking for Senor Larkin, yes?
Yes, and he's like, this way. And he takes you in the direction of the back of the restaurant. And I should say, in March, you're all playing it correctly. It's summertime. It's like late summer in Peru in March. The temperature is going to fluctuate anywhere between 65 and 77 degrees. 77 doesn't sound that hot, but the humidity makes it feel like it's in the 90s. And for all of you, you've got to be a little sticky, even if you're dressed appropriately. So the maitre d' leads you to the back, right up to a table where there are three men already seated. At the head of the table is a pale, thin, white man with greasy blonde hair and blue eyes. He looks relatively young, but his skin is a bit saggy, and he has noticeable bags under his eyes. His white linen suit that he's wearing also appears a little bit baggy. You think maybe it needs to be tailored, or maybe he lost some weight and just hasn't had a chance to get a new suit yet. You don't know. You smell cologne, or a strong smell of cologne as you walk up to the table. You don't know if it's coming from him. It smells good, but it's just, it's a lot. To the left of him is a rather gaunt man with very pronounced cheekbones and deep-set, piercing blue eyes. He has unkempt, medium-length brown hair. It looks like he's given up trying to style in the Lima humidity. He's got a mustache and a little soul patch. And he's wearing an old frayed cotton suit, and a wide-brimmed black hat sits on the table next to him. And finally, across from him, so to the right of the man at the head of the table, is a middle-aged African-American man of, average height and build. He's got short hair, and he's smiling behind a big pipe that he's holding, and he's smoking. He's got on a tweed suit, and there's a fedora hat sitting next to him. So the man at the head of the table stands up when he sees you approaching, and he's like, hello, thank you for coming. I am Augustus Larkin, your host for the evening, as it were. I trust you have gone through the always awkward character introductions between strangers who have never played together.
Yes.
Excellent, good.
Old boy.
Oh, good. I'm always worried about that section of an actual play, but it seems that everything came out aces.
I left my accent on the boat, apparently.
Good.
I'm just going to move on without it.
Yes, you'll often find that in the early sessions, accents change a lot until you really nail down what it is you want to do. But I hope your travel to Lima was without issue. Please, have a seat. Join us.
Yes. We were just discussing and bonding over our various encounters with animals. I was bit by a camel, my friend here was kicked by a horse, and I'm sure before too long we'll have a run-in with an alpaca or two, if I know anything or two about this little country of yours.
The guy
and I
looks...
need about three glasses of gin before I understand anything he's saying.
You say alpaca, and he just he looks to the guy to his left and like smiles, and the guy to his left, he's got the mustache, is just like emotionless. But he's like, that is very funny that you say that, but we'll get to why later. In the meantime, allow me to introduce my companions here. He points to the guy that he smiled at that was emotionless. He says, this is my personal aide, Luis de Mendoza. And this here is Mr. Jesse Hughes from New York. He is a folklorist and, like you, has taken the call to join us on this expedition. Two of you are from America as well, like Mr. Hughes, correct?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I bleed red, white, and blue, baby.
Where exactly are you located out there?
Well, I'm over at Miskatonic University. We're in Massachusetts.
Oh, That's so bizarre. I'm also from Massachusetts. I currently live in Gloucester.
Isn't it funny how we can't decide on how we should talk from that area?
I thought about it and realized that since I actually grew up there, if I messed up a Boston accent, I would be killed by many people I grew right. up with. So I've decided to eschew that.
Well, right I didn't now. Grow up there is what I'm going with. And so, you know, I'm just there for my studies, but that's where I reside currently.
So the older guy or middle-aged guy smoking the pipe is like, well, it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance. I've spent some time in Massachusetts. Beautiful country. Beautiful country. Well, welcome. Please join us. And Larkin sits down and he's like, I want to hear all about your travels as we look over the menus. And he kind of snaps his fingers and a couple waiters come over, hand you guys some menus. And Larkin's like, the food here is excellent, especially if you like seafood. I don't know what everyone's dietary preferences are, but the seafood here is excellent. I highly recommend the escabeche if you've ever had it. It's a hot, sweet and sour fish dish. I've had it several times. It is quite delightful. So, did you have any troubles finding the place? How long was your journey? Please tell me everything. I'm dying to know what it was like coming over here.
That's a very good question. Well, I spent.
Or you could just tell me your favorite ice cream or any haunting sexual encounters you've had. Yeah. This is where we get to know each other. We're going to be spending a lot of time.
Well, I ate on a rocky road, but I wasn't on a rocky road. I took a ship over here, and here I am.
You are quite the firecracker, I can see. Yes, the ship, and no dysentery, I take it.
Oh, why would a lady ever talk about such things?
Aye, that's right. That isn't restaurant talk. What about you, young lady? Is it Margot? Margot?
Margot.
Yes. And are you from Germany?
Yes. I think that... I'm trying to do the TH as a Z, I'm sorry. I think that my trip was the furthest.
Oh, I don't believe that's accurate.
Yes, I had to cross the ocean. Did anyone else cross the ocean?
Yes, the two people from the United States most likely crossed the ocean.
But they didn't cross it back and forth. It was up and down.
This is true. Yeah. This is true. You may have had the longest journey, but
vertical.
Then there is your other companion here, Mr. Villas. What was your journey like? You came from England, yes?
Took a steamer down the coast from Belize, old boy. Now, that was where I first saw your little article and responded to your telegram. But I've been trotting all over this big blue marble for the last several years.
And what do you do for a
speech,
living?
I understand we're all breaking the ice, but let's just barrel forward, yes? Yeah? Natural rhythms will just come to you, even if you say things like you're speaking the Queen's English, even then we all know, because it's the 1920s, England currently has a king, George V, so we're speaking
I was
King's
going to say
English.
Something, but I decided
there was a queen
to just
once,
keep it.
Just
want
to
just put that out there for any pedants in the chat.
What is this, chat? Oh.
Yes, well, you have come from so far, and I was hoping people such as yourselves would take me up on this opportunity. Well, I'm sure you have many questions. I'll give you the sort of nuts and bolts of what we're going to do. And the food starts arriving as he's talking, and he basically explains the nuts and bolts of the plan, but he glosses over a lot of the details, so he kind of expects you to ask questions. But the plan is to head into the highlands of Peru, locate the site of this lost pyramid, and hopefully recover some valuable artifacts. Without explicitly, like, saying so or getting your hopes up, he keeps referring to the fact that, like, there is a chance for great wealth here. This is a legit lost pyramid, and if you are able to uncover the artifacts within, we could all be wealthy beyond our wildest dreams. But he doesn't want to, like, overstate that, but that is the gist that you're getting from him. Or in lieu of that, at least realize some measure of success within your chosen fields, especially Feyruz. So he goes through all of that, eating away, ordering pisco sours, And he's like, but I imagine you have some questions. You've come just on a few articles and a telegram. Please ask away. And if there's anything that I can enlighten you about, I would love to do that right here and now.
I have two questions. Is the food is part of the exhibition here? I don't have lots of money.
Oh, yes, of course. I will be taking care of...
And she, like, takes fish and drinks. I'm just going to stop. Also, this must be hard. Why don't you just go get the things? So, like, what's hard about doing this?
Well, it's always better to travel in groups, and especially having groups with various different skills. I am a... I guess you could say an archaeologist by trade, but having someone with Firuz's know-how and Mr. Villa's skills, it helps flesh out an expedition. You never go and do these things by yourself or in groups of twos. I don't want to say safety in numbers because I don't think we'll see any hazards, but it is always better to bring multiple minds along with you on the journey. And in terms of the food and whatnot, consider yourselves my guests. I will be taking care of everything, including supplies for the expedition. I will provide all of the supplies necessary. Of course, if there's anything special that you think you need to buy that isn't included in what I give you, just purchase it and save a receipt, and I will reimburse you at the end of the expedition. You have given up your time and your life, really, to come and join me on this. I want to make it as easy as possible.
Well, that's very generous of you, Mr. Larkin, but I had a question for you.
Yes.
Have you done any scouting yet?
Scouting? No. I mean, I have spent some time in the area where I believe these pyramids to be, but I have not done scouting so much as research. I suppose I should tell you how I found out about this pyramid in the first place, and perhaps that will answer your question. I was traveling in the highlands where we are going to be heading, and I met, believe it or not, Mr. Villas, a local alpaca farmer. This farmer, a man by the name of Ernesto Molo, he and I struck up a conversation. We were talking about the area, and he said that his grandfather, long ago, had discovered these tunnels beneath a lost pyramid in the mountains, somewhere in the mountains. And while this grandfather was exploring the tunnels, he took two items and brought them back home. And then he left and never returned to the site out of some superstitious fear. Until the day he passed, however, he would always tell his family that there were other treasures in these tunnels as well, and he always wished he took more with him when he went. But he didn't. He believed the place to be cursed and feared ever returning, having stolen these items that obviously did not belong to him. These local superstitions, you must understand, run deep, not only in more civilized areas like here in Lima, but in the country, it runs rampant. Anyway, in speaking to this man, I asked to see the artifacts, and I purchased them from this farmer. Allow me to show you. And he turns around, and he reaches into his bag, and he lays on the table a pendant and a golden cup. And the pendant is in the form of a man who looks like he's holding two staves or maybe two rods. And the pendant is embellished all around with these rectangular shapes. And the golden cup is carved with various geometrical patterns and circles. And it's inlaid with turquoise. Does anyone have any points in archaeology?
I believe I do.
Shocker.
Got 1 point.
You got 1 point. Let's see if you roll rocks, Kate. But
I did take points in archaeology.
Great,
not a
just
lot,
for the hell of it.
But better than one, which I started with.
Go ahead and give me a roll for it and see if anything rings a bell as you look at these items.
I failed that roll.
Kate, did you roll a 1 by any chance?
I'll try. I also have a praise. I'm not sure if that applies.
You know, appraise wouldn't hurt, but right now you're looking for the archaeological significance. I'm sure appraise might tell you how much they're worth.
Oh, I did really good. I got a 13, but that's not enough. Oh.
You could spend luck if you wanted to. I mean, that's not crazy. We are using the optional luck rules. That is awesome. All right, so spend 12 points of luck. You'll have a chance to recover some of those back next session.
Would I be able to inspect it to see if anything seems like it's a coded message? Do these geometric things look like it's language based, or is it just a pattern?
Roll. What like is that? Anything. Your cryptology?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Give that a roll as well. Okay. And then I'll kind of combine this into one giant answer if you succeed.
Okay. Ooh, I just made that one.
Just made that one. Okay. And you wanted to know specifically if it was a language-based thing, or...
Yeah, are these geometric patterns just shapes, or do they look like it's language-based?
Okay. So, from the successful archaeology check, and I'll roll Nora's success in as well. The first thing you realize, Kate, is that these two pieces are from distinctly different time periods and cultures. The first one represents artifacts that somehow in your collective unconscious were probably taken from Tiwanaku and dating back to the 5th century. And the golden cup is of Incan design, probably from the 15th century. So, Nora, you probably know Tiwanaku is a pre-Columbian site in Bolivia, close to the border with Peru. It was discovered by a Spanish conquistador in 1549. It has been a site of serious archaeological study from the 1860s, but little is known of the inhabitants, as they left no written records. These shapes don't seem to have any language correlation whatsoever. But it's very strange that these would be not only from two different time periods, but from two different cultures. So it was one place there once, and then some other culture came in and took it over. It's very strange.
The pendant, which civilization did you say that was from?
The pendant was from the Tiwanaku.
Oh, Tiwanaku, okay. And the second one was Incan.
Got it. Incan, yeah. I had the phonetic pronunciation of Tiwanaku, and I lost it. But anyways,
I'm sure there's people that knocked out of the game entirely.
I'm sorry, I've taken you out. I've ruined it. So Larkin lays these on the table. In fact, there's a great image from the book of this very moment that I will show you as well. On old Roll 20. Mm-hmm. And you can see there's Larkin, there's De Mendoza, and there's Jesse Hughes, and there is the pendant and the golden cup laying on the table. So he goes on to say, that I'm sure there are more learned archaeologists and historians in the world than I, but I know enough to know that these items are quite old and quite valuable. If there is indeed more treasures like this within the Lost Pyramid, we will truly be rich beyond our wildest dreams. Now, while this farmer could not give me a precise location as to the site, he was only going off his grandfather's hearsay, my research has provided enough detail to narrow it down and make an expedition out there viable. It was just by pure chance and dumb luck that I met this farmer, and now it is all our good luck to be the first professional expedition to visit the pyramid and bring its story and treasures to the outside world.
The treasures is the thing that I think I would be the most excited to find.
Well, Mr. Tillinghast, you should you'll be very pleased, I'm sure, then, with the outcome of this expedition.
Carter's just like mouthful of like fish stew and is just like staring at the, this is really staring at the cup, like his eyes really, really lighten up. I'll find all the cups you want.
That's the spirit.
You keep your stories, I'll keep the cups, huh? Huh?
Oh, we must share all cups.
Oh.
But please, I'm sure you must have other questions.
To be honest, I'm just happy to be here, man. I'm just pumped to be away from my wife. I think it's important for us to spend some time apart.
Yes.
And this is just, I'm just happy. Thank you. Can I just say that? Can I say thank you, sir, and you, and you? And he's turning to the other guys. And to the stew. And to the people that own this bar. I mean, who knew? Lima.
It's lovely, isn't it? Well, you
I'm
know.
I'm having a ball. It's a little steamy.
It is hot. And you see, he's really sweating. He's sweating more than all of you. And he's like, yes, I am not accustomed to this weather, but you'll get used to it. And as for your wife, you know, they always say that absence makes the heart grow fonder.
I really hope so.
Do you know anything about the villages or who inhabit these mountains now?
There are local indigenous groups that live in the area, but they all shun the area that we'll be going to. Again, it all goes back to their superstitions. I believe this pyramid to be up in the highlands, closer to Lake Titicaca. It's a huge...
Carter's... laughing.
Yes, it often gets that reaction, that oh, middle school reaction. Yes, Lake Titicaca, believe it or not.
Okay, yeah, no, all right, yeah. Okay.
It's a few days' journey from the city of Puno. yes, another fun word, Mr. Tillinghast. Let me show you a map of the area here. And he pulls out a map, but like as he does, he's kind of looking around at the other people in the bar because he doesn't want them to see. He's like, I'll show you where I believe the ruins to be. So I've marked this map where he's pointing. He didn't write it on the actual map because he doesn't want anyone to see his work. But if you look, you'll see Lima right along the coast here, right under the word Peru, and your journey will take you to Puno. And he believes, and you see there's Lake Titicaca right between Peru and Bolivia, and then right there is where I've put the ruins. That's where he believes them to be. And this is just based on his research, because no one's ever been there.
What sort of superstitions are people worried about?
Well, they just believe that sites like this, long abandoned sites, I mean, look at these items, that the spirits of the people that created these pyramids are still locked within. I mean, you'll see this no matter where you travel, whether it be the pyramids in Egypt or anywhere. It's all just silly, locals. If you ask me.
Yes, so much superstition. But the locals have a name for the culture, the people that made this rather secretive pyramid.
No, they don't even go near the area, and in fact, they probably don't even know where it is. That is why our expedition will be so important, because we'll be able to come back, hopefully, with the knowledge of who created it, who lived there over the centuries, and what it was even created for. None of this information is known whatsoever, but you know, with the exception of this grandfather of an alpaca farmer, there are no actual stories that I have found of people that have discovered the pyramid. So we will be the first. That is what makes this so exciting.
It is exciting. People will write about us.
I'm sure this is what attracts Mr. Hughes here the most. And you see Jesse Hughes, he takes his pipe out and he's like, yes, I look forward to writing many a tale about our journeys.
To see things.
Yes.
Not seen by mortal men or women in time immemorial. Seen only in the imaginations of our wildest dreams.
Shelves and of golden cups. Just whole
boxes
secrets. Full of them.
Yes, well, once in a lifetime experience.
Yes, any number of vessels of any number make, model, and metal.
Well, the more expensive ones would be preferable.
Yes, I believe we should. I don't want to overstate this because I don't think we're going to show up and there'll be nothing there. But I truly believe if these were just two of all the items that exist down there, unless it's been raided before we arrive, we should come out of there with things that we could sell to any museum in the world. There'll be a bidding war for the treasures we find. Mr. Hughes speaks up and he's like, may I ask, how will we be getting to the site? Puno is pretty far from here. And Mr. Larkin says, well, I have hired three trucks to take us all along with our supplies to the city of Puno, right on the shores of Lake Titicaca. And then once there, I plan to buy some pack animals, stock up with fresh food, because we won't be able to take trucks into the direction of the ruins over that type of land. We'll need animals. But once we're there, I hope our journey to the pyramid will take no more than 4 days across open country. If you enjoy camping, it truly will be an experience. And thankfully, in Puno, it's not quite as humid as it is here. In the highlands and the mountains, the air is far more crisp, so I think you'll find it much more agreeable. It will be an experience you will tell your children and your grandchildren about.
Most vertiginous altitude, then, I dare say.
Oh, yes, the altitude is much higher up there, but if anything, it will just make you feel euphoric.
And we get the pleasure of introducing ourselves to a different sort of beast of burden. What? You give a little wink to my bird over there.
Everyone's just kind of like...
Anybody have any points in psychology?
Oh, a little bit, yeah. I do have some points in psychology.
As do I.
Yeah, if you have any points in psychology, go ahead and give me a roll for the hell of it.
Oh, ooh, mine's low, but what the hell?
Yeah, the only thing you risk is fumbling.
Oh my god, I did it.
You did it?
I only have 10 in psychology, and I rolled a 5.
Wow. Wow, okay.
You got the half, that's
it's a hard success.
Hard success.
Would you roll, Kate?
I have a 50 and I failed. I roll a 78.
Okay. At least nobody rolled a fumble.
What is that?
Fumble is a 100 or a 95 to 100, or maybe it's 96 to 100, actually, if your skill that you're rolling on is under 50.
I got real close.
Yeah, well, that's when bad things happen. Also, keep in mind, as we're learning the rules of the game and hammering the rules, you can always push a roll that you fail. But when you try to push a roll, there's two kind of contingencies. One, you have to explain to me what you're doing that's a different approach to the re-roll. And if you fail that roll, there's always a negative consequence. So there's like a high risk, high reward with pushing a roll. But sometimes you're like, I need this roll. For a psychology roll like this, certainly not worth pushing. As you're sitting there and listening to Larkin and questioning him, you just notice, and this would just be Vaughn, that there's like this weird tension between De Mendoza and Mr. Hughes. He's just kind of like giving him a dirty look. It's tough to tell if maybe before you arrived there was like an argument or something. You don't really see that, but like De Mendoza is just giving him like dirty looks throughout the whole thing. I mean, he just looks like a real sourpuss to begin with. So it's just something you kind of register as you're taking everyone in around the table, and your current companions do not notice that. As far as you can see from Mr. Hughes, he seems like a really nice guy. He's as excited as you are. He obviously has his own reasons for coming here. Maybe I'm sure you have all your public reasons and your private reasons, but he seems cool. De Mendoza, a little weird. He doesn't say a word. He just kind of sits there with his arms folded, picking at his food. But Larkin, also very agreeable, very nice. So what else do I need to let you know? I'm sure you want to know when we set out. So we are to leave Lima for Puno in 3 days' time, early in the morning on Monday March 21st. I've made arrangements for all of you at one of the best hotels in Lima. It is the Hotel Mori, and it's located right in the center of the city. One of the best things about Lima is everything's walking distance. You're never more than 10 minutes away of from where you need to be, and likewise, even from this restaurant, you're a hop, skip, and a jump from the Hotel Mori. Unfortunately, when I booked the rooms, there was no other rooms available for Mr. De Mendoza and myself, so we're staying at the Hotel España, which, again, is about 10 minutes away from Hotel Mori. But we will meet Monday morning, 8 a.m., right in front of the Hotel España, to depart. And, yes, we must not miss that time, because that's when I have the trucks and the drivers arriving. And in order to make good time to Puno, we need to leave at 8 a.m., not a second later. And then once we get to the pyramid, the plan is rather simple. We will examine the site and recover any and all items of special archaeological interest.
What shall we do while we wait?
Well, I'm sure you are tired from your journey, so you should rest up. This will be a lot of traveling, especially the overland travel once we arrive in Puno. It will be strenuous, even though the air is crisper and the weather is more temperate. It's going to be a rugged travel with our pack animals.
Now listen up, Larkin. I've been perfectly mum since the moment that telegram came into my possession.
Yes.
But if this has gone out in the press, are there any other treasure seekers making haste to this little high pyramid up in the Andes? Hmm? Is this a race to the treasure?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I'm glad you have not asked to look at my research or the research I've done, because I have destroyed all of it for fear of this exact same thing. I sit here and I make fun of the superstitions of the locals, and yet I am equally paranoid. While I am glad that the press has taken up an article on this so that I could find people as wonderful as yourself and Mr. Hughes here, this is a concern of mine. And now that the word is out, anyone could be mounting a competing expedition. So I just destroyed all of my research for fear of that. But luckily, I have a steel trap up here, and it's all up here, and we should be fine. And even though I do not know the exact location of the pyramid, I feel like I can get there in less than 4 days' time with all of the research that I've done to this point. Now, you asked Margot. Margot, what is your last name?
Oh, geez, I don't know how to say it.
Give it a whirl.
It's different in English.
Sour.
Sour, yes. Miss, or is it Mrs. Sour? Or?
Miss
Sour. Well, you asked her what to do with your time. I suppose you could do some supplementary research if you have time to assist. You could visit the Museo de Arqueología y Antropología at the Universidad Nacional Mayor de San Marcos. I'm sure there are old records tucked away there somewhere that are forgotten about. Whatever it is you decide to do, as long as it doesn't delay the start of the expedition, be my guest. If I were you, I would just rest for the travels ahead, get your mind right, get accustomed to the time and the culture, and don't be like me and drink too many Pisco Sours, which, by the way, the Hotel Mori is famous for. Did you know the Pisco Sour was invented by an American bartender?
And now I actually did know that.
Yes, and that, now it's big here.
Yeah, I don't want to get into it all right now, but yeah, that's when you brought it up, I...
Well, please, fun information like that's always fun. I've never had a Pisco Sour. Me, the keeper, Troy. They sound delicious.
That's good. Yeah.
Yes, so, I will admit, I am feeling a little bit under the weather, so I'm probably going to call it an early night. Just not feeling well. I do apologize if I end this dinner early, but I want to make sure that I myself am rested up as well. And he's just like dabbing sweat on his face.
Did you eat something, man? I mean, you were talking before about dysentery. It's
Yeah, Margot like leans back and she like covers her nose. She's like, "Are you contagious? What's
no,
are you sick?"
No, I'm embarrassed to say that I do suffer from the long term effects of malaria. But I assure you, it will in no way affect my fitness for the expedition. You kind of all notice as the dinner has gone on. There's just this like stink that is, it kind of will hit you every once in a while in your nose, but then it's overpowered by that cologne smell that you smelled when you walked up. And you realize throughout the dinner that the cologne is coming from Larkin, and it's just too much eau de cologne. But from time to time, that cologne smell will dissipate and you'll get this just real horrible stink, almost like rotten meat.
Ugh.
How long have you had these artifacts on you?
These artifacts I've had now for since before the holidays, since November, December. Yes, the article was published in January, and it was around that time that I felt ready to assemble this team.
Hmm.
Yes.
And about how long have you been suffering from these side effects of malaria?
Well, it's been a long problem I've had to deal with. I actually, you may not know it to look at me, but I grew up in Kenya, though I consider myself British. And I contracted it there as a child, and it's just been this ongoing problem that I've had to deal with. But it comes and goes, and I'm like I said, I'm sure I'll be fine by the time it's time to mount the expedition. I am sorry. I should have cooled it on the pisco sours. Do you ever do that when you're sick? You'll still drink alcohol, or is that just me?
Yeah, every time I get a cold, I'm like, I should have a screwdriver.
Yes,
because that's orange juice.
Sometimes it's the best thing for you, old boy.
Oh,
nothing clears the blood like a bit of a cognac, and of course you'll want to have a few bottles of quinine in your kit bag when you go up the mountain. Hmm?
Yes, well, I'm glad you've reassured my terrible alcoholism that I drink when I'm violently ill. Every roll spot hidden check as he's talking and like clearly trying to call it a night. You know, he looks sick, and you notice that he had like bags under his eyes.
I got 39 under 50.
Woo-hoo.
I got a 50 under 75.
Woo hoo hoo! 44 under 75.
Wow, we're gonna make it a foursome, Rob?
I failed.
Okay. So, I failed. Carter's still staring at the cup.
Just licking his chops at that cup.
Ooh, I love that cup.
All right, so the other three of you, Margot, Feruz, and Vaughn, all notice as he's kind of getting up and getting ready to excuse himself, the like cuff of his shirt comes up a little bit, and you see that the veins in his wrist looked very discolored. And the second thing you notice as he starts to stand up and the blouse or his blouse kind of opens up a little bit, he has this like black tattoo peeking out of his shirt that you couldn't see when he was sitting down. It's just seems very uncharacteristic for him to have this. You can't make out what it is, but you do notice those two things, like discoloration around his the veins in his wrists, and this some sort of black tattoo that looks to take up a large portion of his chest. And he says, I do apologize. Mr. De Mendoza will accompany me back to the Hotel España, but please, the restaurant has my credit card, if those exist in 1920. I'm not 100% sure. But the point is I will be paying for this. Yes, there's my
carrier pigeon.
Yes, I gave them my carrier pigeon address.
What's the difference between medieval and modern?
There is, no, it's one or the other.
That's, they will send a raven to me later with the bill. So please, you know, within reason, don't. This isn't a time for a party. There'll be time to pop champagne once we finish this expedition. But right now, I need to call it a night. Otherwise, I will be a mess.
Yes, by yes, that. I've seen malaria and the dengue fever take stouter men than you.
It was so wonderful meeting you, and I truly cannot say this enough. I cannot wait to go on this journey with all of you. So have a wonderful evening, Mr. Hughes. It was wonderful to meet you as well. We will talk again soon. Luis, come. And De Mendoza stands up and just kind of gives all of you a dirty look on the way out, but especially Mr. Hughes. And they exit Bar Cordano.
Carter just turns around and is like, well, he seems like a perfectly normal man.
In every way.
Yes, yeah, the paragon of charm, I dare say.
What was with the other guy that was all sour biscuits?
Yeah. Oh, I think that was just your standard 20s racism.
Did Mr. Hughes stay behind? Or did
he's sitting with you. Smoking a pipe, and he's like, I'm going to use the restroom, but would you care to grab a drink with me at the bar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's party.
I'd love to chat with you. Excuse me for one moment. And he leaves his pipe on the table and goes off to the restroom. So you have a moment to kind of talk amongst yourselves before he comes back.
Well, this is going to be fun. Yeah?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know if it's the... Does every place in here, Lima, smell like... Are you guys picking up on that?
I don't smell it as much anymore.
It's underneath all that musky cologne that was just like death and rattlesnake piss and roadkill.
Yeah, I wish somebody had said something. I mean, Carter's like opens his jacket. He has all these tiny vials of like... I pride myself on smelling wonderful at all times. I have many different odoo things. So just heads up, part of the reason I'm probably here is to provide some good smelling, some hygiene. If anyone needs anything, let me know. Half of my trunks are personal care items.
I've had many people with me on various expeditions, but never traveled with my own personal perfumery.
It's important. It's good for morale, I've noticed, just in day-to-day life. You gotta look good, you gotta feel good as much as, you know, as possible.
The olfactory sense is often neglected. So, yes, I was catching an ode to something over the course of our little meeting. That's a smell I have smelled before.
He seemed really veiny.
Yeah, yes. His veins were blue.
Really?
Gross.
And
yeah,
I haven't known too many academics to be as practiced as he seemed to be in the Polynesian arts.
What are you talking about?
Oh, didn't you see that stick and poke about his breastbone, old boy?
Oh, that, yeah.
Pollination.
Oh, interesting. Okay, you guys are fairly perceptive.
Occasionally, I can spot punch things good. That one might call hidden.
Also, before Hughes comes back, I don't know you, but I don't know them less. Those two artifacts weren't from the same time period.
No, and they could have been in the same little tea set.
What? Oh.
They could have been in the same little tea set.
The pendant was from, like, the 5th century? And then the golden cup since 15th century?
Well, then, I mean, maybe I should ask the question as someone who has been known to... mislead people from time to time. Always accidentally. What if he just grabbed those two things? What if he's just making it up? Two separate time periods that far apart?
Well, what would be the point in making it up?
Yeah, that I don't know.
Spend a lot of money on just this food.
All I know is that if someone's gonna lie, sometimes it's just fun.
What else do you know about lying?
Occasionally... you know, when you grow up, like I've had to grow up, you gotta learn to, convince people of things that might not be true all the time, in order to
snake oil salesman?
Get the things that you want in life.
Val.
I don't. It must be the Pisco Sour or whatever this thing is called. I'm just opening up to you guys.
Give me a retroactive psychology check.
Me?
Those, anyone that has it.
No. All right. Let's try this again.
All right.
Yeah.
50 exactly, nope. But it's not under 50. So that
no, as long as you match or go under, you're good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, as long as you don't go over. Anybody else succeed?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
No.
Okay. And just remember, if you succeed on something, always check it, because during the development phase, you'll get a chance to increase those skills.
Does using your luck to succeed count for the check?
No, it does not.
Dang it.
I'm 95% sure it doesn't. It'll just, you also don't, you can't use luck on, like, damage and stuff like that. Yeah, luck is one of those wild cards that doesn't, you can't use it for that. But that is a success. And so, yeah, Margo, you know that this alpaca story, something about it seems a little too convenient. And obviously there's more to it. You also noticed that, like, as the night went on, he was getting paler and sweatier, and his hands were trembling. So something's very off about him. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like the effects of malaria. Does anyone so have medicine?
Practiced in the arts of perception and creative approaches to the truth. Do you think this Larkin chap is on the level?
I've never seen malaria, but I don't.
Well, having failed all of my psychology roles, I can only assume that he's telling the truth. Although, like I said, you know, he's not, something about it doesn't feel right.
Stumbling upon all of this seems too convenient.
Yeah, here's what seems really fishy to me, right? He's got a bunch of local people around. Why would he have to go send this telegram out to people to bring them over to Peru, where he could have easily hired people locally? But if it was easy to hire, if they were willing to go, they wouldn't have had to do what he had to do to get us over here. Well, but they don't apparently like want to do it.
Won't go near it.
Mm. Why is that?
Do any of you have medicine?
Nope.
No medicine? Okay.
Unless I roll a one.
Got a that's one.
You got a one, so you roll a one?
I mean, I can, but like, yeah. Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, what the hell?
No.
You've been right out. as you're talking and you're like, something doesn't seem right about him or whatever you said, Mr. Hughes comes back over and says, something isn't right with him indeed. Would you care to join me at the bar and we can talk a little more?
There's no place I'd rather join you, old boy. And I just then hop up and follow him over.
All right, so you go over to the bar, and it's kind of full, but there's a section down the far end that is open, and so he kind of motions you over there and goes to the bartender, please, anything they want is on me. And he orders himself, like, a small whiskey as he's packing his pipe. He's like, so do you trust this Mr. Larkin?
As much as I trust any other stranger.
How much do you believe of what you just heard him say?
I suppose a little bit of it strains credulity, Sport. Not least of which because he seems to be decaying before our very eyes.
Yes, I believe that to be the effects of withdrawal from some kind of drug. But that's not my area of expertise.
What are you saying, sir? Do you think this Larkin chap is some sort of hothead?
I think there's a lot to Mr. Larkin that we don't know. But the one thing I am pretty sure of is that he is leading us into danger.
So why are you here?
That's
your thoughts.
Well, first I should tell you that Jesse Hughes is not my real name.
while I am from New York, I am also no folklorist. My name is Jackson. Jackson Elias. And I needed to use a fake name because I was afraid that Mr. Larkin may have read some of my work in his travels and would have been suspicious of my motives in tagging along. But you all seem trustworthy, or at least not with him. I hope that I am not taking this risk unnecessarily in telling you this. I'm not even sure where to begin. I'm an author. That's what I do. And a while back, I had been researching a new story as a follow-up to my previous work called The Black Power. I don't know if any of you have read it, but if you have any interest in death cults, it's a good read, but I'm biased. So anyways, I'm gathering information for this new book, and I'm looking through all these various libraries in New York, and I come upon these legends of the Karisiri. Have you ever heard of the Karisiri?
No. Is there anything we can roll to know?
Do you have...
History,
I think or? I once ate a very delicious curry siri.
I don't think you did, madam, if you knew what they were. But yeah, before he just tells you, I'm curious. What's a good skill? Like, is there a...
Electrical repair?
Try electrical repair. Maybe sleight of hand.
Or maybe I don't have that. Could I roll library use to see if I've read his book?
Yeah, there you go. Library use. Why not?
Oh. Can I? That's I'm gonna do that too.
Yeah, have Holy you ever read smoke. The Black Power?
I've been hot dice. I smashed it. I think I got that extreme.
Man, get out of here. I keep failing mine.
That's why rolling.
Roll a for library
on a 30.
You've actually read The Black Power. Now, The Black Power wasn't about the Karisiri, but when he mentions that book, you can tell him that you've read it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Black Power. Yes, of course. But, I read that on a train to Geneva. What a tore through it, old boy. Didn't sleep a wink. Well, what's it about?
It's about
just remind me.
It's about death cults all over the world. That is something that Jackson Elias is quite interested in.
Green Man, Wicker Man, Kali Yuga, the old death rituals of the Celts, Standing Stones, this sort of thing.
What a small world. Well, this was my fear that Larkin would have read my work, but, you know, I've learned throughout my time on this earth that there is no such thing as coincidence. So I'm researching for the follow-up to this book, which was a success in my field, and I come upon these legends of the Karisiri. I don't know what struck me about it, but I kept digging, and... they're basically these old tales of white-faced vampires who suck the fat out of innocent farmers and their families in the Peruvian highlands. These legends go back for centuries. So while this historical information seemed to be mostly fanciful folklore, to me, I did find that these accounts gained credence when I discovered contemporary stories of murder and mutilation in the same locales as these legends, right here in Peru. Now, death cults have always fascinated me, and this research opened my mind to a whole new direction for my new book. So, at this point, and he's getting excited, and he's drinking his whiskey. I have enough reason to believe that some form of pagan ritual was at the root of all these tales of the Karisiri, and people in Lima, as well as obviously in the highlands, still to this day believe in the Karisiri. But I think it all stemmed from some pagan ritual going all the way back to when these legends started up. There are no vampires, of course, committing these crimes. I think that these attacks were perpetrated by humans, perhaps as some form of human sacrifice. Now, both the legends, as well as the current stories, speak of these Karisiri as being white men. So I'm thinking about that. I'm looking more into it. And if you take into account the country's history, I am now working off the hypothesis that these legends arrived or stemmed from the arrival of the Spanish conquistadors in the 16th century. I think when they arrive, a cult arrived with them and has survived all the way to the modern day. The details of the victims in these myths are eerily similar to stories of cults that I know who practice murder as ritual sacrifice, as you yourself, Mr. Villas, have read in my book, The Black Power.
You're speaking of things that are thousands of years old sport. I didn't think those conquistadors were importing anything but popery.
Might have just been a couple of bad seeds among them that went off, went rogue and started this cult. But it's lasted all the way until today.
Surely you can't believe there's people still practicing this sort of rubbish up there in the mountains.
Well, oh, I'm the biggest skeptic there is. But not when it comes to this. The similarities are too eerily similar.
Hmm. Maybe the surprise the secrets people keep.
Wait.
It sure is.
Margot has not read a death cult book. She's an artist. She's listening to you talk about this like you're talking about, I don't know, what you did yesterday and how cool it was. And she's like, so wait, you're not here to look for treasure. You're here to look for death cult?
Precisely.
Where we are going.
Yes.
At the mention of death cults, can I do like an occult roll to see if I had mentioned, if I had ever read or heard about anything that adds up to this?
Yeah, sure.
I keep rolling so freaking high. Yeah, I know, I failed it.
You're hot for the wrong game.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, just your basic knowledge is that it's not that crazy. Maybe it hasn't come been a big part of your particular studies, but like, there's stories of cults like this. This seems to be what Jackson Elias is way into.
Well, Mr. Elias, I have a little theory of my own. See, these rhymes. Here you find vampires in Peru, and when they should be skulking around in the Carpathian forests or over in Romania. You find a pyramid down in Lima when it should, by rights, be next to an obelisk being gazed upon by the Sphinx. Perhaps it's not that there's some sort of supernatural agency at large in the world, but maybe it's just that the human mind is just that small. And then we just keep endlessly repeating same violent cycles again and again, not able to break out of them. Leading to an inevitable conclusion.
Yes, I believe you're onto something with that line of thinking.
Now, I have a question for you, Jackson.
Yes, Mr. Dillinghast.
If you're writing a book, you're going to need a great protagonist. I'm going to offer my services. You can base any character you want off of me, but we're going to have to talk royalties. Okay, we're going to have to talk percentages. I'm going to say 20% up top.
Let me stop you right there. My work is nonfiction.
Well, that's probably why no one's heard of it. So maybe let's zhuzh it up a little bit. Let's get some adventure.
It's quite popular in academic circles.
Academic circles, please, sir. Let's get some cleavage in there. Let's get some adventure. Let's get some rollicking fisticuffsmanship. You know what I mean?
You're not wrong. That does sell. But
you want vampires with cleavage.
Yeah, you just fight, cleavage fighting each other would be one suggestion. Look, I'm just riffing off of the top of, you know, I'm only a couple Pisco sours deep here, but things are popping up top here.
There's just seven empty glasses.
Let's go. There's eating shrimp too for some reason. There's just like finding loose shrimp around.
Yes.
Loose shrimp.
Just, I don't know, is it pickled? What do they do? Ceviche.
Busty vampires.
Oh, yeah, you're talking vampires. Like Barney the vampire. I read that as a kid. I found it on a napkin.
I get wrapped up in this, and I think this is going to be a real focal point of my next book. I don't know, maybe what you're saying will be a better book, but let's see if nothing comes of this first. Either way, I'm doing this research, and I decide to come to Peru, and I spent 4 months in the Andean Highlands that we are heading to, in the whole region around Lake Titicaca. Just there it is again, yes. Puno, there you go. Get it out of the way. I was meeting and befriending the local people and just researching stories of the Karisiri, and I quickly realized that many of the local people, even to this day, still speak of the Karisiri not as fictional stories from history, but as a real, tangible threat Even now, in modern times, this isn't a ghost story they tell their kids before they go to bed. Watch out, or the Kaiseri will get you. They truly believe. Don't go into the woods. They're out there.
Did you find it easy to get this information from the locals?
Oh, they were very forthcoming.
Oh.
They believe this to be as real as something you yourself may believe in that others may find ridiculous. Of course, I treated their beliefs with respect, even though I don't believe in such things. Now, while some of them could only pass on second-hand accounts, or I had a cousin that was attacked by a Kaiseri, or my great-grandmother was attacked, a few of them actually recounted seeing pale-faced monsters themselves. Either they were attacked by them, or they saw them attacking someone. All of this is to say, going back to my other research, that there is a death cult still active in the region. So I continue digging. I continue digging. I continue speaking with the locals. And as more word gets around, they keep mentioning a name over and over and over again. Luis de Mendoza.
We met that guy.
We sure did, Mr. Tillinghast.
That dude was over there earlier.
He sure was. He was giving me a dirty look.
Old Grumple Stillskin.
Old Grumple, that's what they called him.
What did they say about him besides that?
They said he is a man to be feared.
That's it? Just fear?
Well, whenever he came up, there was a sign of the cross, and just watch out for that man. Now, while I was not able to find any proof of actual wrongdoings on de Mendoza's part, some of them actually referred to him as a Kaiseri.
Where are?
Now, these are very kind, sweet, but obviously simple, fearful people. Larkin himself intimated as much during the dinner, but enough of them kept mentioning his name that I believed it was worth looking into, and at this point, I believe that de Mendoza is a key figure in this Peruvian cult that I'm looking into. So I go looking for him, and I encounter him in Puno. I keep my distance. He doesn't know I'm watching him, but I watch him. I follow him. I take notes. And in so doing, I see his association with another man, Augustus Larkin.
That other dude.
The other dude, exactly. Uh-huh. And ultimately, I hear about Larkin's plan to explore this lost pyramid. Now, I have not confirmed this yet, but my theories have not been wrong yet. I believe that this pyramid, or what's ever out there, the surrounding site, are somehow intrinsically linked to this centuries-old death cult. As Larkin said, and he's not wrong, none of the locals will go near the area for fear of what they might find, for fear of Kaiseri and ghosts from the past. It's remote, though. It's the perfect spot for cult activity.
Well, what do you think will happen if we travel with this de Mendoza?
Well, we'll have to watch him, because there's probably others. Now, I haven't found any of the names of the other cult members, but I imagine that there's a half a dozen to a dozen more people still active in this cult. Larkin himself, while he was in Puno, was trying to recruit some of the locals to go with him on this expedition, and they all refused. No, we can't go. We don't go there. And that's why he put this ad in the paper. He wanted to find foreigners that didn't know any of the histories.
For patsies.
Perhaps. You don't come with any of the preconceived notions of these ghost stories. So, I've come to Lima to follow Larkin and de Mendoza and to try and determine their true goal in recruiting people like us to join the expedition and what this has to do with this cult. So here I am, and they're none the wiser.
Well, thank you for being so forthcoming with us.
Well, it's important that you know, because we're all in this now. And there could be danger But now it's 5 against 2 if they're up to no good.
We'll just have to keep our peepers good and open to make sure that they don't try to pull any fast ones while we're on the road.
Absolutely. And we may have another ally that will help us. I've been in contact with the professor at this University of San Marcos that Larkin mentioned. His name is Professor Nemesio Sanchez. I wanted to interview him for my book. He's an expert on all of the local history. Well, as we're talking, as I get to know him, we become friendly with each other. It comes out that he was interested in joining Larkin's expedition when Larkin put out the call for people. He reached out to him and everything, but Larkin ignored his requests. Perhaps paranoia, because the professor clearly knows more than Mr. Larkin does about the area, about the historical value and significance of what we may find. Maybe he's jealous. Strange, though.
Yes, he wants people who do not know much about what we are doing. I feel like you would be an asset, and you're not interested in the treasure.
Good. That's good.
Yes. Mr. Elias, was it?
Elias Jackson. Mr. Jackson Elias. Sorry, I've had a lot of Pisco sides.
There was a comma in there, I can see.
Yes, that's how I talk. Implied. I use my last name first.
Remember your book clearly. No matter how deluded these various cults were, they performed these black, as you call them, rituals for a reason, to appease some god or another, to have a fortuitous harvest for the year ahead. What are these Cara Siri doing their so-called murders for?
That's an excellent point, right? When you think back to more primitive times, they probably believed in some foreign god that didn't exist, that they were giving their sacrifices so that the god would look down upon them favorably. But these modern times, I imagine people don't believe that anymore. I do not know. I would not even surmise to guess. That is why I need to go there. I think seeing it will all become clear why they do this.
It's all the more intriguing. But since we're dealing with people who play fast and loose, it seems, with the truth, there may come a time when we have to speak in a more international language. What? And here Vaughn kind of picks up his bag and pats a little bulge on it. So let's all just keep our eyes good and open.
Carter's like, I read you, and taps his pocket full of vials of
perfume.
waft of lavender comes
out. Loud and clear. You see this tiny puff of powder go.
Should we have a safe word or like a warning word so we can communicate in front of them if something is wrong or I don't know?
That's a good idea.
Let me consult my... I brought a list of current slang words.
Yes, it should be a word that's not so common that we wouldn't just randomly say it in conversation.
How about giggle juice? It means liquor, as you all know, since we all are living now.
Yes, I've had too much giggle juice. That's why I fucked up my name. But, yes, that is smart. And while I don't condone violence, it may come to that. I don't know what it is thereafter, but we will not be victims to this cult. We will get to the bottom of it. I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but this is what I enjoy doing. I don't enjoy just sitting in a library researching. I enjoy getting out there and finding out not only what happened, but what's happening.
Yes. I may not believe anything about what you've told me about this cult with so-called powers, but I do know what people will do for the power of belief, whether it's a god or love of country.
I know what I'll do for those gold cups. I'll tell you that right now. A lot. Well,
I'm sure you'll be welcome to take them, although Professor Sanchez may have something to say about that. I wouldn't mention that around him. The people who are from here do not take kindly to grave robbers, as it were. And maybe that is why Mr. Larkin has not contacted Mr. Sanchez. Either way, tomorrow I'm to meet with Professor Sanchez. He has some old documents and artifacts related to the site, or he at least believes related to this lost pyramid site. So I'll be going to the university to look over those documents with him and his assistant. Perhaps you would like to accompany me.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes, I'd love to use the library there.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I think that would be great. I find it strange that Larkin even suggested it, where he ignored this man. But good. Yes. Safety in numbers.
Let's try to walk into this little expedition a little less blind than they were before. Dare to know and all that. Semper Aude. Hmm?
Yes, and do not let on that you know what I have told you, if they are involved in this cult.
Of course.
They are dangerous men, and as the people said about de Mendoza, they are people to be feared.
Very well, done's the mouse, old boy. And if anything seems untoward, we just have a sip of giggle juice.
There it is. See? Already, you're practicing. I like it.
Hmm. Any further things to discuss before we call it a night?
We'll talk more about the book and whether it's fiction or nonfiction. I've got some ideas. I'll scribble some things up tonight.
Yes, slip them under my door. I'll be sure to read them.
I think that the protagonist should be named Tartar.
Tartar?
Yeah.
Like the sauce?
Well, just because my name's Carter, I don't want people to immediately link it to me. So I
How
feel
about
like...
Tartar Killinghast?
Yeah, that's great. Fun. Yeah.
Well, I'll certainly consider it. Maybe
it's
fiction.
It's the 20s. Everyone's drowning in tartar. Everyone's up to their ears in tartar. So,
I don't want to write this book, but
we'll figure it out. We can
talk. We're going to be spending a lot of time together, hanging out with death cults and
outlining adventures, pulp series.
Yes, we should go to the hotel. I'm very drunk. It's only a 10-minute walk. Everything's a 10-minute walk, which is nice. So we don't have to rent any cars. Now, I speak some Spanish, which will be helpful. I got the sense from the way you were interacting with the waiters. You don't speak the language, correct?
I speak the universal language of charm.
Well, that will come in handy, Mr. Tillinghast, or Killinghast. It's good that I'm with you, because speaking the language will help. Let's head back to the Hotel Mori. And so you head outside into the Lima night, even though the sun is set, and now it's 10 o'clock at night or whatever, 10:30, 11, getting late, depending on how long your talk with Mr. Elias went. It's still hot out. And you're in a foreign land, far from your homes. You came here all for different reasons. And now you find out that you're getting into something that isn't what you thought it would be. And so you all go to sleep in this nice enough hotel. Mr. Larkin said it's one of the nicest hotels in Lima, but the fact is there aren't a lot of great hotels in Lima in 1920. It's a city that has gone through a country that's gone through a lot of political upheaval, and in the 20s is just starting to see that kind of influx of a cosmopolitan life, so they don't really have a lot of great hotels. But that said, it's a nice enough hotel. And you go to bed, some of you pretty hammered. And you wake up the next day, Saturday, the 19th of March, and Jackson Elias tells you you have a meeting with Professor Sanchez at his office at the museum
which is a part of the university, at 2 p.m. Is there anything you want to do before you go to the museum? I mean, you're tourists.
Margo would like to go to maybe just an art museum and, you know, chill her brain out after that wild night of information.
Mm-hmm. So you go in, and oddly enough, they have an expressionist exhibit there.
Wow. You know, I came for different inspiration, but it's just nice and homey feeling to see.
It's a universal language.
Yeah.
So you go in and you just look at these paintings, and you think your stuff is better, or are you wowed by this level of art?
I think she's probably a bit more critical than most people would be of it, because she's like so close to that type of art. So maybe she's like looking a lot deeper than other people are. Like, if she's not moving from piece to piece immediately, like she's really going in while looking at it and critiquing it to herself.
What is Feyruz up to?
You mentioned that there was a museum of archaeology.
Yeah, that's where you're going to head.
That's where
we're
heading.
Of the university,
okay.
Where Professor Sanchez is. But you could show up there early and take a tour.
I wanted to go check out what artifacts they may have from those two different time eras to see if they lines up with the design or if it's very different.
Okay. Oh, I like that. All right. So maybe you tell the group, like, or you see somebody in the lobby, you're like, I'll just meet you there at 2:00. And you head over there. They give you a little tour and they say, well, the university was founded in 1551, which makes it the oldest seat of higher learning in the Americas. This is all in Spanish. The museum was only opened 2 years ago in 1919. And so when you see this long two-story stone building painted dark yellow, and it's fronted by the university park, and so you know the museum's in there, and so you're in there and you're looking around, and you do find something from the 5th century, and it looks impeccably similar to what Larkin put on the table.
Okay.
If you spend some more time, because you have it, if you get up early enough, you also see some 15th century Incan artifacts that also match the designs. You see those same geometrical shapes. Not exactly the same, but enough that you think those must have been legit.
All right. Well, that gives me some reassurance. Is there... Can I do like a spot hidden to see if there's something that I'm missing within just the general design from things in this era, or something that's even a little off?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Finally, get and this was a 13 under a 75.
Oh yeah.
Finally. So this is like not an extreme. What's the most success? Because it's in the 5th value.
Okay. So you're just looking around specifically for what? For just anything else that jumps out at you?
Yeah, that's different from what we saw. Or perhaps something that just doesn't fit right within the things that were shown to us.
Okay, so as you're looking around, you hear this voice of a young woman behind you, and she says, "Remarkable, isn't it?"
Fascinating. This is actually the first time I've seen artifacts from this era.
Really? Oh, well, it. I never ceases to amaze me when I walk through these halls. And then you turn and you see a very young girl, like maybe late maybe 19, 20 years old, and she's got a bundle of papers under her arm. And she says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bother you. I'm working on my English, and I could tell that you're not from here."
"Oh, no, I appreciate the help. It's hard. I don't speak Spanish very well at all, so it's welcoming. Thank you."
"Yes, my name is Trinidad Rizzo. I'm an undergraduate student here at the university. I'm helping one of the professors. What is your name?"
"Oh, I'm Feyruz. Are you studying archaeology? What is your area of study?"
"I would say archaeology is probably my main area of interest, but I, as the more that I study about this area in particular, it's hard to really find a focus. My professors say I'm still young, I can decide later, but I'm just kind of in awe of everything. So yes, probably archaeology. Do I want to be an archaeologist? Maybe. Do I want to be a writer? I don't know. I'm in it right now, and I feel like I'm on the verge of something new every single day."
"Well, you sound very excited, and you're still young. You can take all the time you need. I studied cryptology. That's currently still am studying cryptology."
"Cryptology. Oh, well, that's wonderful. That is great. I don't know much about cryptology, but I imagine that would come in handy. What is it that you are hoping to be?"
"Well, I'm not sure if I want to stay within the university and do something there, or write books, or keep going on expeditions if I like this one, but I'm just fascinated by secrets."
"Ah, yes. Secrets. Secrets are... they unlock many mysteries, don't they?"
"Yeah.
You could sit with a secret for a long time and never quite figure out what it means, but... I too am fascinated by secrets. I mean, look around us. The stories that each of these artifacts must hold."
"Exactly. And sometimes, you know, the way you communicate these secrets is kind of my area of research."
I'm fascinated by this. I wish I could speak more, but I'm actually I'm actually dead.
"Are you okay?"
She's got the same thing as what's...
"Oh, God.
I don't know if this is Troy not feeling well, or if this is she also has a thing that..."
"Does she smell bad?"
"Check her veins."
"Oh, my God.
Troy,
she has a Polynesian tattoo on her chest, like..."
I'm joking.
Just, for people who can't see, just slumped over. We don't actually know if he's still alive.
"Sorry, hold on one second. I'm joking.
If I was gonna die..."
"Yes."
"I would want it to be..."
While I helplessly listen to my friend joke.
"That was the worst moment of my life."
"And it's been filmed. It's great. It's been recorded.
This is
it. Relive it whenever you want."
"What a way to go. Oh, God. Tell my wife I love her."
So you're saying we each get level up, or how does it work before you go?
"It's over." "Okay. How do I look?"
Like,
good.
"I'm crying.
Your eyes are streaming tears. It's perfect."
"Sorry. Sorry, we
get
out of this.
I get very emotional too."
"Good Lord, something flew into my throat and it was just air. What happens when you get old? Air gets... did you feel that air in there?
That was a big chunk of air."
"That's some hair on that air."
"Oh, no."
She says, "I'm sorry. What the fuck were we talking about?" Before I started, I told myself I was going to quit smoking. But I'm a nervous student.
Oh.
It's okay. Here, she like unravels like a little throat lozenge and hands it to her.
"Oh, God, thank you. We're sitting here. I'm dying. Why did you hand this to me minutes ago?"
You were flailing around too much. I didn't want you to choke additionally on that.
I'm sorry. I'm under a lot of pressure. School is hard. My parents will beat me if I don't get straight A's. Oh, God. Anyways, I'm in the middle of helping my teacher, Professor Sanchez, working on this project. So I have to fucking get out of here.
Okay, well, I will meet up with you later today.
Oh, that's very nice, very forward of you. I don't have many friends here at the university. You want to hang out?
Sure. But you know, my colleagues and I will be meeting with Dr. Sanchez, Professor Sanchez. Later.
You're meeting with Professor Sanchez?
Yes.
I was under the impression he was just meeting Mr. Jackson again.
I'm a little confused too. I thought that's
no, but like she probably doesn't know that Jackson Elias is now bringing all of these people. So you're spot on. She didn't know that, and so she's like, "Oh, well, wonderful. Well, then I guess I'll speak to you later. Perhaps we will unlock some of these secrets together." I'm gonna go throw up.
Coughing.
She grabs a handful of lozenges and runs. What are you doing, Carter? Don't role play with anyone.
It's so bad for laughing.
That was the worst. That was the worst.
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry, Troy.
I'm leaving this all in.
Keep it all in.
It has to stay.
Oh my god! If you edit that out, I'm gonna be so pissed.
It's so embarrassing, but like I couldn't control. You know, when you just can't control it.
I don't know how you could cut it out because.
Oh Lord!
Yeah.
Oh man.
I'm excited to spit all this blood up later because clearly I have severed something in my throat. Carter, what are you and Vaughn doing when you meet in the lobby at the breakfast buffet?
I think Carter comes down a little later than the breakfast. I think he's just sort of, you know, nursing a bit of a hangover, just kind of adjusting his fake face as he comes down. I don't know, you know, like, he's a con man. So it says that I can have contacts. Maybe I could kind of go to some nefarious place, although I don't know if the whole not knowing Spanish thing is going to be an issue.
Well, good thing is, like, you could always find somebody to help translate for you, and there are plenty of people that speak English, so you could easily have a contact that is bilingual.
Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, because I'm just wondering, like, would they be trying to? We're based. They're not like hiring muscle, right? They're hiring us. They're using us as these stooges to go on this thing with them. So maybe I'll wait on that until we have a better sense of what they're.
But you're just thinking in the back of your head, like you've have your own reasons for being a part of this. Like you're in it for the treasure. Now Jackson Elias is telling you, like, yeah, it's not about the treasure; it's about this other thing. So you might be like, all right, I need a backup plan here.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, I just think he's so driven by this potential treasure and what that could mean for his life that he's kind of willing to toss aside some of the more common sense what's left of it in his brain, what didn't get kicked out by the horse. So I think he's just kind of like, I mean, free trip, like free hangout in Peru in Lima.
Could be worse, right?
Is there a continental breakfast? What are we talking about down here?
Sadly, you miss breakfast. They stop serving at 11.
Ah, the time change is what really got me.
Yep, more than you slept in.
More than the alcohol.
Three bottles of gin. What about Vaughn Villiers? What is Vaughn up to the morning before your 2 o'clock meeting?
I think, also wakes up with a screaming hangover, but that's not new for Vaughn. Just like cold compress of wet rag over his eyes, like coming down, grabbing a couple of things from the breakfast table. It's like, and smoking his way through it as he makes his way out. And I think he wants to learn more about these Karasiri.
That one's name, I bet that one's fake.
A name that evokes profound reactions in all that hear it. Oh, oh God, Troy.
I'm sorry.
Guys, I'm sorry.
While he's composing himself, yeah, you guys see, keep saying this word, and I don't know how to spell it. Karisiri?
I don't know that we've ever had like a spelling. Is it Karisiri or Karisiri?
Karisiri?
Karisiri.
Don't know.
Yet. KH.
Okay. Yeah, we don't know it yet.
I thought I was the only one who like didn't know what this word was. Okay.
I'll put it in the chat.
You muted.
I'll put it in the chat here as my final words.
My final act on this earth.
My final act on this earth.
But honestly, I feel like, yeah, I Vaughn goes to, if there is like a bookseller, maybe not a library, but just like a bookseller where there might be books in lots of different languages, and searching for ones on like local customs and or history of the area, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and so you start looking up Karisiri, and you see that they're also referred to in mythology as Pishtakos. They're just like mythological boogeymen in the Andes region of South America, particularly in Peru and Bolivia.
Pishtako.
And it's mainly in Peru that they're known as Karisiri, but they go by a lot of different terms. And it's very similar to tales of creatures like this all over the world. They all kind of have the same thing, this boogeyman quality to them. In Peru, they're known as Karisiri. They might be known as the boogeyman in America. Pishtako in Bolivia. It's crazy that Elias thinks that there might be some actual historical credence to this, that like, no, there's no vampires running around. There's a death cult going around killing people, and it links back to the arrival of the conquistadors, and that's why people think they're all white-faced men, because they're descendants of the Spanish conquistadors.
Vaughn thinks all of that is ridiculous, but does know that the power of belief can inspire people to do irrational things, and has a perverse thrill that he is walking into danger because he believes that like he's cheated death and he's living on borrowed time. Every day is one snatch from the jaws. So once more into the breach, and maybe just before like takes out of his pocket a folded little couple pages of paper. This poem written by his friend in this crabbed, tight hand. And it's in that sort of like 20s style of like the wasteland. Just this like litany of images from like mythology and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'll see it with my eyes. But you could not. I'll live your words. And goes to make the little rendezvous.
And so all of you have your things you do in the morning. Wake up late, miss the breakfast buffet, go to an Expressionist exhibit, talk to your friend's letter while researching Kaiser Soze, or go to the museum ahead of time and run into this enthusiastic, very ill woman. And so eventually you all head to the Museo de Arqueología y Antropología at the Universidad Nacional Mayor de San Marcos. I don't know Spanish at all. Professor Sanchez has an office on the ground floor. It's an airy, tall-ceilinged room that Jackson Elias walks you into. White walls, shelves full of books and artifacts. And dominating the room is a large hardwood desk piled with papers, books, journals. Where it's summer, like I mentioned before, he has the windows open to air out the room. And it's nice. It feels nice in here.
You see Professor Sanchez. He's slim and dapper, with neatly oiled hair and a well-groomed beard. He looks like a professor. He's got glasses, and where he's actively teaching, he's wearing a suit. Very professional-looking. And he looks surprised when he sees the five of you show up, as he was only expecting Elias. But once Jackson explains the situation, he is happy to meet you and include you in the discussion. He speaks passable English and tries to accommodate you where you don't speak Spanish. He knows that Elias does. It's the worst day of my life. And he says, when I saw the press coverage, I reached out to offer help to this Mr. Larkin, only to be ignored. I thought maybe he didn't get my message, so I continued to be gently persistent to him, sending Mr. Larkin a number of letters containing specific advice on the region and offers of my help and my knowledge. But every time I have only been rebuffed, and all of my correspondence has gone unanswered, as you say. The reputation of the museo here is such that I do not understand why Mr. Larkin would not want my help. It seems suspicious to me. Perhaps he wants to loot the site without interference from a local such as myself. There are no, legal restrictions in Peru to prevent foreigners from doing this.
I like that. That's good.
No, this is not good.
No, that's bad. That's a bad thing. You're right. That's horrible.
Yes, this frustrates me deeply. People who would remove my country's treasures in such a manner, we call them huaqueros.
Oh.
Yes, this is a Quechua word. How would you say, Mr. Elias? And he says, like a grave robber.
Yeah, that sounds awful. Unless if you think about it, unless the grave robbers could do a lot with that money. What if a grave robber took what they stole, but then used that money for good? Makes you think.
Yes, that is not usually the case.
Well, you don't know. I mean, you don't know any. You don't know somebody's motives. I'm just saying, there's no black and white in this world. It's all kind of just gray.
Yes, a most gray area, says von Villiers, thinking of the British Museum and tugging at his collar.
Yeah, imperialism in general, who are we to say where an item belongs? Is not everything made of atoms? I don't want to get too heady here.
Whatever your interests may be, he looks at Elias, and Elias is like, no, he's cool. The half-faced guy is cool. At this point, after being ignored, I believe that my only recourse is to identify the exact location of this pyramid myself and get there first. But now time is running out. Apparently, Mr. Larkin, as Mr. Elias tells me, is leaving on Monday. So
that's right.
I asked one of my students who I work with, Trinidad Rizzo is her name.
Oh, yeah.
She's a wonderful student. What's that?
I met her earlier.
You did? Were you taking in the museum?
I was. I just, I like to get here bright and early.
Oh, she's wonderful. She has been so helpful. She will be light years ahead of me when she is 20 years younger than me at this rate. So her and I have been working together, going through the university library and archives for any possible information about this pyramid. Recently, we find something. We find an old document dating from the mid-16th century, written by a conquistador by the name of Gaspar Figueroa. And we believe that this document refers to the site in question. Problem is, it is difficult to read. So Miss Rizzo, my assistant, has been working on a summary that picks out the pertinent details. We almost have it finished because we know we are under the gun here with Mr. Larkin taking off. I actually just asked her to run to the storeroom below me to get this artifact that we think will help kind of round out the remaining parts of this translation. She should be along here any minute to join us in this meeting. I'm actually surprised she is not back by now.
You have an artifact from the site?
Not quite, but it's an artifact from that period that had similar writings on it that we could help sort of help us decode some of this language. The local language at that time was even more complicated than the indigenous languages that even I do not speak fluently. So we were trying to use our translations of this old artifact to help us crack this cold. It's not my main area of expertise, but together we are very close. Once she returns,
help you with that?
I'm sure we will be able to. I am surprised.
You want us to go take a gander to see if we can find her?
That would be fine. Actually, you know, she probably just, there's so much stuff down there. She is so inquisitive. She may have just come upon something else that grabbed her interest. But if you'd like to go down there, you are more than welcome as friends of Mr. Elias. There may be other things down there. You just obviously listen to her. There are things you can touch and cannot touch. But let her know that we are in a hurry. She is a firecracker. I'm sure she just saw something down there that caught her attention. But you just go, and he gives you the directions to the storeroom.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go get her. We got a chop chop here.
Yeah, I'm sure we could help her out with translating.
All right, so he gives you the directions, and you walk out of the office. You turn a corner, and you walk down a short hallway to a staircase leading down. You go down the staircase, and it turns in a way that you realize you're walking in a direction that would lead you directly under Professor Sanchez's office. There's a long, dimly lit corridor stretching ahead of you. It's the weekend. It's Saturday afternoon, so the basement is quiet. There's no students or anyone else running around down there. It's empty. It's dark. It's quiet.
Is it so quiet that I could not try to listen with a skill of mine called listen?
Go ahead and listen.
Let me just use these ears, you know? They're on my head for a reason. I succeeded.
You succeeded. Regular success?
What's the threshold again?
50% or one half value or 1/5 value?
I got half.
What'd you roll out of what?
I rolled a 30 out of 60.
Okay, so that's a hard success.
Right.
So you actually do hear something as you walk down this hall. You see a single door at the end of this hallway, and the door is ajar. There's like a padlock hanging from a latch. There's no other door, so this must be the storeroom. And you hear this very strange sound coming from beyond the door that's almost like a gasping for air kind of sound.
Guys, I don't want to alarm anyone, but I'm hearing a gasping for air kind of sound.
You don't suppose that young woman is experiencing some sort of terrible respiratory distress?
Yeah, that woman you said who had the TB that you met earlier.
she was coughing a lot.
Well,
did it sound like a woman's voice? Did it sound?
I think when you're gasping for air, it's less of a gender thing and more of just like a desperate intake for oxygen.
That's fair. I just think maybe we could just kind of sneak in there or kind of not be so...
Just not run in? I like that. Like not running.
Yeah, okay. kind of like stealth my way over.
Yeah.
Just to see
A couple of different ways you can do this. You can do a group stealth roll, which means the person with the worst stealth rolls it, or one of you who is trained in stealth and feels pretty good can go up and scout ahead and only they roll.
I got a 40. Does anybody have anything better than
I also have a 40.
35.
So since I listened, Carter's like, you know, I can hang back. It's probably however you want to work. You know, I'm trying to be equal rights here with the lady man thing. Like, if, since I listened, if you want to stealth, put yourself sort of closer to the danger. I feel like, you know, I'm not one to whatever you want to do.
Carter, all right, cowardly decrees.
I'll roll a stealth, and I've got, you know, I had a pistol with me if there's anything that's
fishy. Yeah,
but we're in a museum. What could possibly go wrong?
Such an ally.
I rolled a 36 under 40.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice. Oh,
yeah. Okay, so you kind of look at the group and you're like, hold on. And you walk slowly up towards the door that is ajar. And you look into the storeroom. And you see that it is filled, floor to ceiling, with evenly spaced rows of shelves. And most of the shelves are packed with crates, boxes, and bags containing a huge variety of all sorts of artifacts of historical interest. I mean, this is like a Christmas morning for someone like you. Everything is neatly labeled, and everything is clean and well kept. The lighting in here is terrible, and because the shelves are so packed, it's not only difficult to see very far in or into the other rows, but like you could only walk one person single file, and at times the stuff is bulging so much you have to kind of slide by. But you do see up ahead in the dim light what looks like a mess of artifacts on the floor.
And am I able to at this point hear where that sound was coming from?
Well, you peek in and you do hear that gasping sound that Carter heard coming from the direction of this pile of artifacts.
I look to the group and without saying a word, I put my finger to my lips and kind of motion for them to come over slowly and quietly.
So they come sneaking up behind you. And do you enter?
Once everybody's there, I will point out the... again, without saying anything, because this is weird. I'm getting creeped out by that sound. I just point out to the artifacts.
Yeah, and they kind of... they're just looking over your head because it's so
thin. On this is basically the first time you notice.
Yeah,
with like their a sitcom. Heads are on the
full
end.
Scooby-Doo,
right. The full head stack.
Yes.
On this little journey over there, you maybe realize that Von Villiers' footfalls are a little bit heavy and unstealthy, and that is because maybe you didn't notice. But there's a pronounced hitch in his gait. Mm. He is noticeably limping.
Okay.
So he clods up behind you, and there you're kind of trying to look past Feyruz to see this, and you do see like a pile, and you can kind of hear that gasping, but it's so tight in there. So someone's going to have to go up by themselves, or with the other people like squeezing in behind them.
I'll go in if...
Okay. All right.
Margo wants to go in just because she wants to help whoever's in here. So she'll go in after you.
And I'm happy. Yeah. I don't wish anyone to.
It just, like, right now occurs to both Nora and Feyruz that maybe if Trinidad was coughing and wheezing so much earlier, she wants to see if maybe she's in any sort of danger or distress.
Right. It's hard to know where the role-playing started.
Exactly.
And my slow death began.
This is less suspicious and more like, oh, this is a first aid situation.
Yeah.
This would be the biggest bait and switch I've ever done as a game master.
And perhaps with that in mind.
The whole time?
With that in mind, as a veteran, hearing gasping that like I think there's just like in that like sound, there's just like a flash. And for a second, you see, Vaughn in a gas mask, face to face with someone else in a gas mask, and you just hear the all around and like a tweet over the top and boom, back. And it's like, I'll go. And Vaughn will go to the sound.
Nudge
to try
past
to administer favors. First aid.
So are you guys all going in?
I think I'm already in at this point, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Car's just like, everyone's just going to go in? Everyone's just going to leave me here? You guys sure? She's probably fine. Okay. All right, we're going in.
There's artifacts on the ground. I would like thinking if that'll persuade him to come in.
Like, she's already taking a nap. I mean, she loves all this stuff. Maybe it's like, you know, it's like teddy bears, but they're artifacts.
So okay. Vaughn edges past Feyruz and just walking sideways through here. Feyruz follows right on Vaughn's heels, and Margot goes in next, and Carter just does
that. Okay. All right, that's fine. I'm a team player. Let's do it.
And so you walk up behind, and the four of you are just walking in through this tight, tight space, and Vaughn, you're up front. You reach the end of the second row of the stacks, and you see all these papers and relics lying all over the floor, extending into the next aisle to the left, past what you can see ahead of you, until you get to this, the end of the stacks, and you see, half buried under a pile of artifacts that look like they've been pulled off the shelves, the body of a woman. And Feyruz, you get up there as well, because it's a little wider. We're in that space between the stacks, and you see a slightly built woman with curly black hair that looks exactly like the woman you spoke to in the museum. But now she is emaciated beyond recognition, almost to the point of mummification. And you see on her upper chest, there is a large disc of torn, bloody flesh. And her shriveled face is frozen in a mask of terror, eyes still wide and staring. And we'll see you next week.
What the heck?
Yeah.
It's exactly.
One hell of a cough.
I will see you with lemon, week. Everybody.
Yeah. Honey, maybe a little honey.
Oh, God.
It's time to make your membership official. Start your 30-day free trial today and become an official member of The Niche at jointhenaish.com with the promo code GCN30. That's jointhenaish.com and use code GCN30 to gain access to exclusive podcasts, ad-free episodes, and content you can't find anywhere else. Once again, it's jointhenaish.com and use code GCN30 at signup to get your first 30 days for free. Tell your friends, come join yourself, and see what everybody's talking about when you join The Niche today.